This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of September 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of September, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And David Dalton.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: residents' anger at parking invasion, covert plan appears, and work of fitness group founder celebrated. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is residents' anger at parking invasion. Winchester residents have blasted the City Council for allowing a parking invasion of their streets after the upgrade of playing fields. People living in the Highcliffe area are complaining about the problems on local roads following the increased use of the King George V field at Bar End. The issue came to a head on Saturday and Sunday, September the 8th and 9th, with the opening of the improved facilities at King George V. King George V will be the new home for the Winchester City Flyers girls football teams. There are only 20 parking spaces at the field itself. Highcliffe resident Janet Elloway told the Chronicle, "On Milland, Vale and Portal roads, residents are inundated with vehicles parked by people inside King George V. They parked on pavements, on yellow lines, on corners, across residents' driveways, and in the morning, whilst dropping children off, they pulled up and acted in the same manner, parking everywhere that suited. Parking on the pavement, on corners, forcing oncoming cars to take corners on the wrong side of the road, doing three-point turns in the roadway, approaching King George V, showing total disregard to residents living in close vicinity." Another resident, who asked not to be named, said, "The council has been asleep over this. They need to sort out this pronto." At the town forum, Susan Croker, head of landscapes and open spaces, said traffic had been well managed on the Saturday, but not so well on Sunday. Local residents are calling for residents-only parking to be extended to force people to use the nearby park and ride. The criticism comes after the town forum heard Lib Dem councillors complained of a lack of coordination between the new £38 million plans for a sports centre and the revamp of the adjacent King George V playing fields. "The city is missing the chance for a proper new sports and leisure park," the town forum heard. Councillor Liz Hutchison told the town forum, "I cannot understand why not design it as a whole. At the moment it's a hodgepodge, not looking at the area as a whole. We are missing an opportunity to create, with the leisure park, a proper leisure and sports park. This is a very important site, but there isn't an overall vision." But Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for finance, disagreed. "The two schemes are working together perfectly well." Ms Croker said, "We have worked closely with the leisure centre team to try to link the two sites. We hope we are achieving that to deliver the joined-up approach." Ms Croker said one idea from a public consultation on the future of the King George V playing field was that Gordon Avenue should be aimed at younger children and King George V at older ones. The pitches at King George V had been upgraded for the arrival of the girls' football teams. That was celebrated at a football tournament reported in the Chronicle last week. The council was addressing public concerns about the likely increase in traffic. In the long term, the entrance to King George V from Milland Road in Highcliffe needed to be addressed. On the parking issue, the council said yesterday, "Winchester City Council will be starting a consultation towards the end of September with Highcliffe residents to consider if further on-street parking restrictions and/or amendments to existing restrictions are required in the area. This will consider the impact of activities which already take place in the area and the potential new sport and leisure centre. As part of the improvements to King George V playing fields, and whilst considering a potential new pavilion, the council will also consider the feasibility of improving the access to King George V.
Covert plan appears. Final ideas are crystallising for the revamp of Winchester City Centre public gateway. St Maurice's Covert, the link between the High Street, Market Lane and Outer Close, has been in need of regeneration for years to reduce its neglected and magnetism for antisocial behaviour. Scott Whitby Associates have been drawing up ideas and consulting the public since 2016. Project leader Chan Ming Tong presented the latest ideas to the town forum last Wednesday. She said the aim is to declutter the space, removing the waste bins and bollards and improving the links to the outer close and cathedral. Lighting will be improved, a new ceiling installed and new paving laid to make the area more attractive and highlight its heritage. There are currently 6 types of bollards, 5 different architectural styles and 2 different types of bins, creating a discordant effect, the meeting heard. The gravestones would be relocated to inside the tower of St Maurice's Church. The hope was that the covert would become a space where people could sit and relax. Councillor Fiona Mather said improving the area also depended on the near neighbours Debenhams and the Mercure Hotel on the other side of Market Lane. She said, "I live in faith that Debenhams will do something about their shop windows. Dressing shop windows is an art that seems to have passed them by." The car park at the Mercure Hotel, said Councillor Mather, was disgusting. She added, "The forum heard that there were no graves under the gravestones and the stones were relocated to the covert in the 1960s when the then Wessex Hotel was built. And there are 4 photographs, 2 of the proposed look and 2 of the existing ones. They look quite nice."
Work of fitness group founder celebrated. The founder of a sports campaign group has been rewarded with a statuette to celebrate her success. Emma Back, who created the Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, known as SALT, was one of 25 women in the country to receive the award recognising the achievements of women. The statuette was unveiled at the Winchester Lido last weekend as part of the Heritage Open Day's Put Her Forward ceremony. Emma has devoted long hours to the trust and has campaigned for a new sport and leisure facility in the city. She is also a chief supporter at the Lido and has set up various events over the past few years, including the Children of Winchester Festival and the Winchester Club Hub. Put Her Forward aims to recognise the women who play significant roles in society. Kat, one of 2 hosts from the ceremony, said, "Today is the first time I've actually met Emma, though we've spoken a lot on email. The thing that strikes me about Emma, and which is probably the most obvious thing to say, is that she is active. Even now, Emma is taking time out of being involved in Winchester Heritage Open Day activities." Emma's statuette was the 12th of its kind to be unveiled. Emma said, "I was very shocked to find out about the statue, but also very honoured. I hope any resulting publicity brings greater recognition for all community volunteers in Winchester, particularly those in our sports sector, which is really unappreciated. Sport only happens in our city because hundreds of local people give their time and energy for free to make it happen. Indeed, the Lido building was saved from demolition in the 1980s only through the efforts of community champions." And there is a picture of Emma with her statuette, in which she is dressed in dark fitness gear, and she seems to be holding a basketball under her left arm and a shuttlecock in her right hand.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for this week. Black, Peter Black, died peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home on the 10th of August. Constable, Raymond Arthur Constable, who died on the 26th of August, aged 75. Gaffor, Sarah Beatrice Gaffor, died suddenly on the 4th of September, aged 55. Hamilton, Gordon William Hamilton, died on the 16th of September, aged 89. Lehman, Carol Lehman, died in the RHCH after a short battle with cancer, aged 75. Leslie, Shirley Ann Leslie, née Benstead, who died peacefully at home, aged 84. And Mort, Elizabeth Joan Mort, died on the 11th of September, aged 84. So, that concludes the death announcements. Now we have Christian comment read by David, please.
This week, members of cathedral chapters from all over the country are gathering in Manchester for the first ever National Cathedrals Conference called Sacred Space, Common Ground. The conference explores the role cathedrals play in our national life as places of pilgrimage and sanctuary, enriching century-old traditions with contemporary expressions of what Jesus means for today. The keynote speakers set the context for cathedral ministry in contemporary Britain, which, as we all know, is dominated by our preparations for Brexit on March 29th next year. Brexiteers and Remainers alike agree on perhaps one thing, that it will be the biggest shift this country has made since the Second World War. The Archbishop of Canterbury was lambasted last week for wading into political territory in his TUC speech. His call for justice reflects how alienated from one another we are. However, Brexit divides both the main parties once you scratch beneath the official party line. One of our keynote speakers in Manchester argued that given the state of the UK in 2016, you would have thought the vote to leave would have been bigger. 7 out of 10 of the poorest regions of Northern Europe are in England, and the 8th is in West Wales. The 8th is West Wales. In one of the poorest towns in England, Blackpool, 330 people out of 1,000 are on prescribed antidepressants. Our nation is more divided than ever in wealth inequality, health and investment. London gets 6 times more infrastructure investment than the rest of England. If people are unhappy, they will vote for change. And so we voted to take back control. Geoffrey Archer is reported to have travelled up north, and he pondered as he looked out of the window that if he lived in the north, even he would probably vote for Corbyn, as he agrees with half of his policies 100%. Whilst parts of the north may be grim, as the famous Monty Python sketch goes, there is much grit, determination, beauty, prosperity and joy as well. The symbol of Manchester is the worker bee, hard workers that get the job done. We are enormously privileged in Hampshire, despite the ways austerity over the past 10 years has reduced the money available to our councils. With privilege comes responsibility. The social contract that defines how we become one nation has broken down. We have no agreement on how we are going to heal the nation of mental illness, of loneliness, and income disparity. There are, one speaker suggests in Manchester, too many people who extract wealth out of the economy rather than people who help generate wealth in the economy. What we need as we prepare over the next 6 months is to take back control of what we want our country to become. If cathedrals can play any role in this process, it is to provide a safe space, common ground, on which we can meet and talk together. We will have deep disagreements that go to the heart of who we are, but we need at least talk together about what taking back control means for a divided nation. If Jesus means anything for today, he will help us bring wholeness out of hostility. And that was provided by Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral.
Thank you, David. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this one from Terry Smith, who's the Community Development and Support Manager for Open Sight Hampshire. Headed iCare. Sir, the 2018 National Eye Health Week will be held from September the 24th to the 30th. Eye care professionals from across the UK will be joining forces to promote the importance of regular visits to an optician and how early diagnosis of a condition can help prevent sight loss. Open Sight Hampshire, the county's leading sight loss and eye healthcare organisation, is currently running an initiative called Keeping Your Eyes Right to raise awareness of good eye healthcare and sight loss prevention, including advice on simple lifestyle changes which can have a significant effect on our eyesight. For example, a balanced diet, regular exercise, protection from the sun's rays and not smoking make major contributions towards the positive healthcare of our eyes, specifically, and of course our general health and well-being too. However, the most effective way of taking care of our eyes is to visit an optician at least every 2 years. Not only will our vision be checked, but any underlying condition may be detected, diagnosed, and in many cases successfully treated. For a free leaflet about Open Sight Keeping Your Eyes Right initiative, please call our East Lee office on 023 8064 1244 or visit www.opensight.org.uk. Information on the National Eye Health Week can be found at www.visionmatters.org.uk. And this from Terry Smith, Community Development and Support Manager, Open Sight Hampshire, Church Road, Bishopstoke, East Lee.
Virtuous Circle. Sir, Jonathan Moore of Communities Against Noise and Speed, Chronicle Letter, September the 13th, with whom I sympathise, says he's been told the road policing unit lack the resources to control or stop motorbikes travelling at speeds of up to 100 miles an hour. There could be a virtuous circle here, a few speed cameras and automatic fines with the threat leading to loss of licence would generate funds for more policing. Isn't this what most motorists complain about everywhere else in the country? And if the police hadn't announced that they had no intention of enforcing the 20-mile-an-hour limit in central Winchester, they could do the same there. On the odd occasion I've had to drive through the town, it's almost impossible to keep to the limit, as absolutely no one does. The traffic lights at the junction of Southgate Street and High Street would be another very valuable source of funds if properly policed. The number of drivers who go through on red is enormous. All illegal, all irritating and potentially harmful to pedestrians, and all capable of being enforced with a warning followed by a financial penalty. As for the noise levels, in town and country, surely technology capable of catching the decibel levels of vehicles. Modify exhaust systems, beloved of motorbikers, are illegal. although astonishingly, there is no legal limit to road noise. Perhaps that's an issue for your new green-ish environment secretary to consider. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This letter, which is headed End This Carping, comes from Richard Blackman of Keeble Close, Hursley. Sir, hooray for Lisa Griffiths, calling out the Lib Dems and their constant negativity around the new sports centre at Bar End, Chronicle September 13th. I get the feeling that if the Conservatives said the pavements outside the centre will be paved with gold, the Lib Dems would complain they might be slippy. Increasingly, I feel we need to support this council in getting on with the job of building the new sports centre to replace the worn-out River Park. We also need to support the council in the Silver Hill regeneration and its vision for station approach. They need to be improved as a matter of urgency, because it's been absolutely years. Every week in the Chronicle, I read about Lib Dems or someone else saying, oh, it's not right, we need this or that instead, and I'm fed up of it. For how long should we listen to this carping and not come out and support those who actually want to build something? The Lib Dems and others, like Councillor Kim Gottlieb, need to be warned that there is a growing majority who are getting mightily fed up with those who just constantly criticise every little thing about the regeneration of the city, even though just about everyone has been asked their opinion. They go on that Winchester is special, and who can argue with that? But equally, they can't seem to see there's absolutely nothing special about Silver Hill or Station Approach, or River Park, unless you like poor quality street scenes, tired out leisure facilities and dereliction. So, good on you, Councillor Griffiths. Keep up the good work and continue calling out those who seem to never be happy.
And this from Nikki Gottlieb, Festival Director of the Heritage Centre. Headed Heritage Open Days, a thank you. Sir, I would like to extend a huge thank you to everyone who contributed to making this year's Heritage Open Days in Winchester such a success. Special thanks go to our stalwart army of volunteers who do so much work behind the scenes in putting the festival together. However, I am particularly grateful to Becky Brown, a whirlwind of energy and talent, whose commitment, support and enthusiasm has been unwavering and without whom the festival would not be what it is today. I am also very grateful to our lead sponsor, Winchester College, for their kindness and their support, the City of Winchester Trust, Hampshire County Council, all our event organisers, and above all, the thousands of visitors and residents who made the weekend so worthwhile. I'm delighted that Heritage Open Days has become so popular in Winchester, but with no core funding and as one of only two unpaid full-time volunteers who coordinate, register and promote a programme of over 100 events, I do have serious concerns for its future. It is impossible for us to sustain the number of hours that go into the preparation of a festival of this size and nature, and Becky and I are now looking to others for further organisational support and funding. I very much hope that the festival will return and delight you all again next year, but in the meantime, we would welcome your support and suggestions via our website. And that was Nikki Gottlieb, Festival Director, the Heritage Centre, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
Brexit chaos. Sir, Mr. Grubb, Chronicle Letters, September the 6th, voted leave, but has now changed his mind because of the difficulties the negotiation has revealed. He holds that had he been aware at referendum of what the Treasury is now projecting, he would have voted to remain. During the referendum campaign, the Treasury was pessimistic about Brexit, an attitude encouraged by the Cameron government. Aptly nicknamed Project Fear, projected all the downside risk but no benefits. exactly as the Treasury is doing now. Contrast this with the HS2 projections, which predicted massive, inferred, benefits and underestimated massively the real costs. After the referendum, about the only Treasury projection which proved correct was the immediate fall in the pound. This had almost recovered when Mrs. May began to show what a hopeless negotiator she is, provoking more lasting sterling weaknesses and contributing to such flights of business as we have experienced and the loss of the position in EU bodies to which we made significant financial and intellectual contributions. The Brexit vote may not have been binding. However, MPs by massive majority authorised the government to invoke Article 50, and that's it. It is not simple to return to the situation ante. The EU might be willing to accept us back, but it would be no return of the prodigal. The EU would need us to be humbled. We would be made to pay for invoking Article 50, including the cost of Michael Barnier and his team. Just that number would make our eyes water. Goodbye to the Thatcher rebate. The ground May has surrendered by allowing Barnier, etc., to trample all over us would take years to win back. The only sensible choice is to make a success of Brexit. One part of Mr. Grubb's letter, which I agree with, is his assessment of the Chequers' proposal. On that, he seems to agree with Boris Johnson and David Davis, as do I. And that was from Tim Major, Bassetwood Drive, Basset, Southampton.
Statue tribute. Sir, the tribute to medieval businesswoman Licoricea of Winchester in constructing a statue of this iconic lady and her son is an appropriate reminder that Jewry Street was the centre of a thriving Jewish community. Chronicle, September 6th. Licoricea raised funds for major historical projects, including Westminster Abbey and the Great Hall. Her murder and that of her Christian maid in 1277 would have been the prelude to further anti-Semitism and the expulsion of the Jews from England. Reflecting the Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment of September the 6th, it is indeed hard to imagine such happenings when compared with present-day Winchester, which has a positive reputation for friendliness. We should be thankful that Winchester is indeed a beacon of harmony, peace and kindness. And that comes from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And the last letter, entitled The Thin End, is from Kenneth Jones at Alsford. Sir, the councillor who thinks pensioners would not mind paying 50p per trip has not asked my wife or me if we would mind paying it. Does he realise if we have to attend the Winchester Hospital, that 50p turns into £4, bus from Alsford to Winchester, Winchester to hospital, then return? If the 50p is passed, knowing how politicians think, how long will it be before that 50p is increased to £1, then £1.50, etc.? Don't forget, never trust a politician. And that from Kenneth Jones, Arundel Close, Alsford. And now we're going to step back in time with 200 years ago from the historical items, Nikki.
Which was dated Monday, September the 21st, 1818. On Thursday last, Mr. Alderman Silver fractured his arm in consequence of a fall from a horse owing to the bridle breaking. He, however, was able to proceed without assistance to a surgeon, where the fracture was reduced, and we're happy to say he's doing well.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, September the 21st, 1918, section leader John Alfred Innes, motor ambulance convoy, died on service on September the 10th, was the third son of the late Sir James Innes of Roffey Park, Horsham. After leaving Winchester, he went through Messrs Armstrong's works at Newcastle and subsequently became partner in Messrs P. Wigham, Richardson & Co. In October 1914, he joined a Red Cross Motor Ambulance Convoy, BEF, serving with it in the First and Second Battles of Ypres. He was mentioned in Lord French's dispatches and held the 1914 Star. A year later, he became a section leader in a convoy attached to the French army. Captain W.D. Ward, Hampshire Regiment, accidentally killed, was a school and college cricketer of good class.
Two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 21st, 1968. Firstly, a plea that development of Stockbridge High Street should not be continually put aside was made by Mr. P. D. Merridale at the Central and Northwest Hampshire Area Planning Committee in Winchester on Monday. The committee had before them an application from a consortium for residential development on the south side of the High Street. In January of this year, approval was given in principle for the residential development of approximately 10 acres on the site, but a condition was added that no formal permission be granted until the Highway Authority had completed their studies and formulated proposals for access to this site from the High Street. And secondly, when Archdeacon J.R. Bainan and his wife were in Canada recently on a visit to their married family, the Archdeacon was asked to appear on Elwood Glover's television programme on the CBC network throughout Canada, in which he interviews visitors to Canada. Knowing that Mr. Bainan was Archdeacon of Winchester, Elwood Glover began by asking him whether the people of Winchester resented having the pop song Winchester Cathedral made about the cathedral, and whether he felt it detracted from the dignity of the cathedral. This gave the Archdeacon the opening to talk about Winchester Cathedral, and during the half-hour interview, he was able to tell them a good deal about its origins and history, the difficulties of maintenance, and the story of William Walker, the diver.
And two items from 25 years ago on Friday, September the 17th, 1993. The first, Winchester City Planning Committee has voted to approve the plan for developing the lower barracks. It deals a serious blow to a proposed scheme which has a lower density of development. The original barracks scheme, strongly advocated by planning officers, does not preclude another scheme being put forward, but this will take a good deal of time, the Chief Planning Officer Simon Birch has made clear. Only two members of the Planning Committee, Norman Hibdidge, Vice Chairman, and Patrick Davies, voted to defer this original plan. They wanted more time to take up an offer to meet a representative of the owners of the site to discuss the future. But it was the feeling of most members that the time had come to resolve the matter. The amended scheme is for the building of 127 residential units, 2,164 square metres of business floor space, and 350 square metres of retail and surface level parking. The underground parking has been dropped. The new parking will be chosen from one of four layouts above ground at the southern end of the upper barracks. The garrison church at Lower Barracks will have a business use. The second item, Friends of King Alfred Buses held a ceremony in the Broadway, Winchester, on Wednesday to mark the departure of a double-decker bus they've restored to exchange with the Richmond County Museum in Georgia, USA, for a former King Alfred bus. This 1956 Leyland Titan, which ran on Winchester bus routes for 16 years before being sold in 1972 and exported to the USA, is the only surviving King Alfred bus that the Friends of King Alfred buses has not yet brought back home. The vehicle being sent to the States is an ex-Leicester Corporation double-decker bus, which, like the King Alfred bus, was built in the 50s and has a half cab and open rear platform. Excuse me. It has been restored by the Friends of King Alfred buses and, at the request of Richmond County Museum, painted in King Alfred livery with the famous emblem on the side. On Wednesday, it received a formal send-off from Ray Pierce, the Deputy Mayor, excuse me, who has warm memories of travelling on King Alfred buses as man and boy. The Mayor, Mrs. Susan Glasspool, has signed a book about the history of King Alfred Motor Services for the Friends of King Alfred buses to present to the people of Augusta at the handover ceremony at Richmond County Museum in October. And now we go on to the editorial chronicle comment, I think, Nikki?
Yep. Which is headed, The Role of Women in Winchester Society. This week's chronicle is full of stories about the achievements of women. Emma Back has been hailed with one of only 25 national awards for her unsung campaigning on behalf of sports clubs in Winchester. The fantastic Heritage Open Days at the weekend, run by Nikki Gottlieb and Becky Brown, staged a poll for people to vote for the most extraordinary women, marking the centenary of the granting of the vote to some women. Universal suffrage had to wait until 1928. Peter Simmons College has its first female principal, Sarah Russell, after nine men previously held a position. BBC presenter Dame Jenny Murray praised the growing importance of women in business by the Test Valley Business Awards last Thursday. Society is changing, and although in places it may be too slow, women are increasingly playing an equal role. Hopefully in a few years' time, all these stories won't even be worthy of mention. We won't consider men and women just people. But we also report on the story of Licoricia of Winchester, who in the 13th century was among the most powerful business people in this country. The local Jewish community is funding to pay for a statue in her honour and for educational work. That she rose to the top in the Middle Ages is a testament to her character. That she was murdered, perhaps partly because she was a woman, is sobering.
And now we have first person, Norma, please.
An End to Austerity by Khalid Aziz. We're celebrating. Well, not exactly. It's 10 years since the start of the Age of Austerity, and my goodness, what a long way we've come. Everyone suffered, but of course not everyone suffered equally. And there are some who believe that some people would have suffered more, to wit, bankers. In the minds of many, were he alive today, Dante would have had an extra eighth circle of hell to his existing seven, one that would go well beyond hellfire and brimstone and the usual pitchforking as promised to ordinary mortals who transgressed God's rules. No banker went to jail is a common cry, and I must say it's something that has crossed my mind. However, 10 years on, I'm not sure what that would have achieved apart from a brief warm feeling for some. Today, everyone feels hard done by, even the bankers. And there's no doubt that it's been tough. In business, people have struggled to make money. In the early stages of the recession, it was distressing to make some people redundant. Distressing to make some people redundant and reduce the hours of others. For those individuals, it was a disaster. Among those more telling indicators of austerity was the rise of food banks, which we still have. 10 years on, things are getting better, but it's fair to say that we are not out of the woods yet. We have Brexit to worry about, and the blonde prince across the water, whose presidential antics aim to make America great again, look like initiating global trade wars from which everyone will suffer. And then there's the looming spectre, or angel, depending on your point of view, of artificial intelligence, which offers the prospect of a leisure-filled utopia, but will eliminate millions of jobs, although we can all agree that some way off. Despite all these worries, prosperity is returning. Definitely green shoots. A BBC News report flashed up a graph last week showing that in terms of household incomes, we're almost back to where we were before 2008. However, people can be forgiven for thinking things are still rough. With instability in national politics, voices are getting increasingly shrill with political jockeying for party leaderships and ultimately the country's governance. People's emotional strings, already taut, are being plucked mercilessly, and the more often than not the result is discord. At the heart of all this is that elusive emotion, happiness. Many politicians have no compunction, aided and abetted by unscrupulous media elements, including some broadcasters, in telling people how unhappy they are. "Vote for us and it can all be put right," they say. In our hearts, we know there are no simple solutions, but it's tempting when someone promises to take all the pain away. Life's not just not like that. There was some fascinating research just published which suggests that cause and effect is counterintuitive, the other way round. It is apparently not possible to create sustainable happiness through external factors. Yes, there can be fleeting spikes of joy stimulated by external events, but a sustainable state of happiness comes from within. In his book, 12 Rules for Life, An Anecdote to Chaos, clinical psychologist Jordan B. Peterson averts that for sustainable happiness, you must take responsibility for your own emotions and not let them be hijacked by others. Even then, there will be highs and lows. So yes, let's celebrate. Celebrate the fact that globally, at least there has been in the last 20 years, a serious reduction in global poverty, although there is much more to do. Celebrate that the poverty experienced abroad makes a lot of us Brits look positively lavish. Celebrate that those who have money, apart from already providing the vast majority of tax revenue, still dip into their pockets, people like Bill and Melinda Gates. If you want to feel better, it's up to you. Feel better.
Thank you. Now we've got a couple of items of the alternative look at the news from Belgarum, David.
Indeed we do. Firstly, the AA link with the grave. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, not the motoring organisation. It is one of the most famous graves in the country. It was highlighted in Songs of Praise on BBC in a segment filmed during the recent celebration of recovery at Winchester Cathedral. Josie Darby reported the link between Winchester and Alcoholics Anonymous, beginning with the visit of Bill Wilson, one of the co-founders of AA, to the cathedral as a young American serviceman in World War I. He described his chance discovery of the gravestone of the 19th century Hampshire Grenadier, Thomas Thatcher, who died of a fever after drinking small beer. On the first page of the AA handbook, he wrote for the movement. Thatcher's grave is visited by members of AA from all over the world. An AA meeting in the cathedral last month celebrated the centenary of Wilson's visit and was attended by over 700 AAs and their guests. And there is a picture of Josie Darby alongside the Thatcher gravestone, which is in the outer close of the cathedral. And the second item is headed, "The Latest Trump Merchandise." A man selling toilet paper in Winchester High Street attracted hundreds of curious customers last week. Tim Baker, a 29-year-old marketing business manager from New Zealand, has been selling dozens of rolls from his trolley every day. But his product features a rather unique style. It has Donald Trump's face printed on every sheet, There are two designs behind Tim's business. One of the president pouting his lips, and one where he is making a speech to the Republicans. The Kiwi has sold over 8,000 rolls since starting the trade last Christmas, touring the whole country with his trolley full of presidential potty paper. He said, I was on a train with my mate one day and we were speaking about starting a toilet roll company because they never run out of customers. Everyone needs to wipe. After thinking for a while of what to do, it just hit me, and now I'm selling it. Many people stopped to speak to Tim in the high street, and many others purchased his product. He caught customers with his catchphrase, "Don't dump without Trump," and says the idea has proved so successful that he expects to be on the property ladder by the end of the year.
I'll follow that with what's on then. Right, there's a couple of items for what's on. A couple of concerts to start with. Sunday the 30th of September, in Winchester Cathedral at 8 p.m, there's a concert in honour of the life of clarinetist Alan Hacker by the Fitzwilliam String Quartet. Tickets from the Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. And the same day, Sunday the 30th of September at 7:30 p.m. in the Church of St Cross, there's a concert called Songs of Angels, and that features the Thomas Weeks Singers with Nigel Gardner on chamber organ and Lionel Handy solo cello. Tickets again from the Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. In the theatre, the Theatre Royal Winchester has an improvised musical called Showstopper on Thursday the 27th of September at 7:30. And it's a comedy musical, I think, that that they put together. It comes from the Edinburgh Fringe. And the tickets are from the box office, 01962 840 440. It's on one night only, Thursday the 27th of September. The Mayflower Southampton has Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo. It's an all-male comedy ballet company known as The Trocs. And that's performing on the 28th and 29th of September at 7:30. Tickets are from the Mayflower box office on 02380 711811. And an advance notice from the Hampshire Cultural Trust of an event in the Guildhall of Winchester, Saturday the 20th of October. It's Winchester Early Medieval Power and Faith. It's an all-day conference headlined by broadcaster and historian Dr. Janina Ramirez. It's a one-day conference exploring the great churches of Winchester at the time of the Anglo-Saxons and Normans. You can get an all-day ticket or a half-day ticket. The all-day ticket includes full programme, lunch and refreshments. And you can contact 01962 678 140. That's 01962 678 140. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 21st of September at 6:50 a.m. and begins at 7:06 p.m. And on Wednesday the 26th of September, it ends at 6:57 a.m. and begins at 6:55 p.m. It's getting darker in the evenings. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, City Joins Loan Shark Fight. Leaders of Winchester City Council are backing a zero-tolerance charter in an attempt to crack down on the unlawful moneylenders who use violence to get their money back. On Monday, the City Council signed up with the aim to stop loan sharks from operating in the district. MP Steve Bryan said that the authority deserved praise for stepping up on the issue, with the council admitting that it wasn't aware of the full scale of the problem. An in-house training event was also organised to raise awareness of illegal moneylending in a bid to help officers recognise the signs and know where to go for help. Christians Against Poverty, which runs a Winchester debt centre, warned that loan sharks move the goalposts at will and demand unending amounts of interest. Mr. Bryan said loan sharks prey on the poorest in society. He said the City Council deserve praise for stepping up on this issue. While I doubt few are mourning the demise of Wonga, the danger in unscrupulous loan sharks moving into that space, and its poorest in society who they prey upon. Anything we can do to help people with financial advice, and especially warnings about illegal moneylending activity, is helpful. The charter signing is to be attended by a number of councillors and representatives of community organisations who will be invited to find out about the issue of illegal money lending and what is being done to tackle it, the City Council say. Two credit unions, which are organisations that lend money to people with low interest rates, operate in the city. They are Solent Credit Union and Wessex Community Bank. A spokesperson for Christians Against Poverty, whose Winchester Debt Centre offers free financial help and advice to those in need, said that the guarantee offered is your personal safety. They said unregulated lenders or loan sharks can move the goalposts at will, demanding unending amounts of interest and when you should pay, and there's no comeback. This means you can feel trapped into an ongoing debt situation very fast with no redress. There is also the threat of violence too. It won't be sold to you like this, but your guarantee in this informal arrangement is your personal safety, and that's too high a price to pay for any loan. Winchester City Council said that a project group has been set up to work alongside the illegal moneylending team in cracking down on loan sharks in the city. And there is a photograph of great rolled-up wads of £20 notes. Be warned.
And on our seasonal item here. Onset of autumn, the season to enjoy nature's bounty. After a long, humid summer, autumn is finally with us. Falling leaves, morning mists, jewelled grass and the sense of impending change are just a handful of the things that make autumn so magical. Fruit, nuts and seeds are abundant. Glossy blackberries embellish hedgerows, while shiny brown nuts and polished red berries decorate the trees like baubles. And for wildlife, it really is Christmas come early. Elderberries. These small, rich berries are prized autumnal treat for dormice and bank voles, who gorge on fruit and nuts all through the season in preparation for a lengthy winter hibernation. Elderberries are easy to identify from their deep purple-red colour and are often found near rabbit warrens. Rabbits love to eat berries, and in doing so they help germinate the seeds. Blackberries. Blackberries are a sure sign of the onset of autumn, eagerly awaited by foragers and wildlife alike. While we look forward to pots of homemade jam and blackberry crumble drenched in custard, blackbirds and thrushes flock to devour these distinctive dark berries, which are a valuable source of energy. Even foxes enjoy blackberry picking. Sweet chestnuts. Encased in the familiar spiky shell, sweet chestnuts are favourite among hungry squirrels and quickly disappear to their eager paws. Sweet chestnuts make a lovely seasonal treat toasted over the fire, but be quick or the squirrels will cache the lot. Rowan berries. Rowan trees are widespread throughout Britain, famous for the bright red berries they bear throughout autumn. Rowan berries are a rich source of vitamin C, favoured by the whole host of birds, including blackbirds, missel thrushes, redstarts, redwings, song thrushes, field fare and waxwings. Well, something to look forward to in autumn anyway.
Over 150 county officers' jobs lost. More than 150 frontline officers from Hampshire Constabulary have been lost in the last 3 years, despite violent crime increasing in places such as Southampton. Figures from the Home Office reveal 156 officers in roles categorised as visible operational front line have gone from the force between March 2015 and this year, a drop of 10%. Over the same period, the number of violent crimes recorded in the county has grown by 85%, reversing a long-term drop. It comes just days after new research found that thousands of crimes, including burglaries, car thefts and shoplifting, are going unsolved throughout Hampshire. In the 12 months to March this year, 52,834 violent crimes were recorded. In total, there were 1,449 officers in visible front lines this March. The Police Federation says that a reduction in the eyes and ears of England and Wales police services is causing communities to suffer. Its chairman, John Apter, formerly head of the Hampshire branch until earlier this summer, said, "Neighbourhood officers represent the backbone of policing in this country. Local officers who are the eyes and ears of the service, providing a reassuring presence on the streets, helping to detect and prevent crimes." The government has to acknowledge that as violent crime increases, and with ever-present threat of terrorism, the cuts to the service are coming home to roost, and it is our communities that are suffering as a result. A spokeswoman for the Home Office said, "Forces are changing how they deliver local policing to reflect the priorities of local people, and so that they can respond better to the changing nature of crime." Last week, research showed police close investigations without identifying a suspect in 80% of household burglaries, 75% of reported vehicle thefts, and more than 50% of shoplifting cases.
Musician knifed to death in bush attack. The bells of Winchester Cathedral rang out for an hour on Sunday in memory of a Hampshire man stabbed to death while birdwatching in South Africa. Simon Milliken, 60, was confronted by an armed attacker and, after trying to create a diversion to save his friend, was found stabbed to death the following day. Mr. Milliken was a well-respected musician in the KwaZulu-Natal Philharmonic Orchestra in Durban, having emigrated 30 years ago. Having grown up in Fawley and Brockenhurst, he then moved to Ampfield, where his mother and brother still live. On August the 31st, he was birdwatching with guest conductor Perry So, 36, in the Burman Bush Reserve near Durban, when a knife man appeared. They fled in different directions, and Mr. So was robbed of his bag, and the attacker chased Mr. Milliken. It wasn't until the following morning that Mr. Milliken was found on a path. Police are still hunting for his attacker. Fellow musician Kathy Peacock said, "What has happened leaves me beyond words, trying to process this terrible tragedy. Simon was always such a delight to be with. I loved him for his wry wit, for his wholehearted enjoyment of life, not least his passion for opera, and for his kindly interest in those around him." Bongani Tembi, the orchestra's artistic director, told a national newspaper, "Perry So believes Simon did his best to defend him and told him to run in one direction while Simon attempted to escape in a different way and took the attacker away with him." Mr. Milliken was born in Fawley. He developed an interest in bell ringing through his father, the Reverend Michael Milliken, rector of All Saints, Fawley. He studied at Brockenhurst College and played with the Hampshire Youth Orchestra. He joined the KwaZulu-Natal Philharmonic in 1985, and there's a photograph of Simon Milliken looking more like a rock star, with dark glasses, long curling brown hair, and a very good grin, carrying what I can only presume is the double bass, because I can only see the top half of it. But what a loss.
Cathedral takes centre stage. Winchester Cathedral was back to normal on Tuesday after an all-day closure to allow for the filming of The Crown. The hit Netflix show took over the church on Monday, so it was closed to visitors and tourists and only opened for evening prayers. The cathedral spokesman said, on Monday, the cathedral was officially closed due to filming for an upcoming drama series. The cathedral provides a stunning location for filmmakers, and we are thrilled to have yet another production come to Winchester. Winchester City Council tweeted a photograph of extras at the Guildhall courtyard off Colebrook Street, waiting to be called. The drama, estimated to cost £100 million, follows the life of Queen Elizabeth II. It shot several scenes of early shows in the Winchester College area around the Wickham Arms in January 2016. The Crown starred former Doctor Who Matt Smith as a young Prince Philip and Claire Foy as Elizabeth in her younger years. It will span 60 episodes over six series. For series three, Olivia Colman and Tobias Menzies will take over the lead roles. And there's a lovely picture of all these extras, mostly men, I must say, draped in wonderful costumes and uniforms. They must have had fun.
Celebration of County's Top Women. The winner of Hampshire County's Most Extraordinary Woman ballot has been announced. Nearly 400 people voted in the Winchester Heritage Open Day special election. The City of Winchester Electoral Services have declared that Josephine Butler received the most votes, with 112 ballot papers marking her name. Social reformer Josephine publicly campaigned for female rights and achieved huge social and legal reforms at a time when women did not even have the right to vote. She also advocated to eradicate child prostitution and sex trafficking across the world and successfully campaigned to revoke the Contagious Diseases Act. Josephine was described as the most distinguished Englishwoman of the 19th century by Millicent Fawcett. The other women nominated for the ballot were Elizabeth Bather, Juliana de la Flood, Mary Ellis, Queen Emma of Normandy, Louisa Perks, and Tilly Schilling. The aim of the election was to provide all ages a glimpse into the lives of influential women from the county's history. It was not a conclusive list of nominees, and visitors were encouraged to tell of any other extraordinary women of Hampshire who were overlooked. Organisers are still willing to hear about any other extraordinary women from Hampshire.
Rugby pitch named in honour of clubman Aidy. Winchester Rugby Club officially opened a new memorial pitch to remember a club stalwart who died earlier this year. The Aidy Mort pitch is located at North Walls Park and is dedicated to Adrian Mort, who died in April, aged 48, after a short illness. All four of Adrian's children play rugby at the club and will be using the new pitch. Immediately following the opening, his daughter Caitlin captained the Winchester Ladies Tag Rugby team. Club chairman Steve Barrow said, "Over recent years, our existing pitches have struggled to accommodate our ever-increasing playing membership, which is fast approaching 1,400. This great new community facility will be a great asset, particularly to our youth, ladies and girls rugby sections. I would like to personally thank all those involved in the planning and preparation of the new pitch." The ribbon to officiate the opening was cut by Adrian's close family and sponsor, Dave Crowther, from Crowther Contract Carriers. Dave's company provided the new posts, flags, post protectors and pitch side equipment for the pitch. And there's a photograph of all the various people who attended, some wearing the very striking orange and purple striped rugby clothes. And there is a lot of quite strong looking legs, I have to say, which obviously need play rugger, and two extremely small dogs which are lost amidst the legs. But there's one thing about this picture. It's someone has forgotten to tell them to smile. Normally I say they're beaming. They really aren't. But anyway, good luck to them.
And we're still on the sporting theme. Golfers hit 100,000 cancer target. Hampshire golfers have hit a major milestone in fundraising for a cancer charity. The annual Peter Cooper Motor Group golf event at Goodwood has now helped to raise over £100,000 for Action Against Cancer in just 6 years. This summer, golfers from all over Hampshire took part and raised over £18,000. Darren Cooper, Managing Director of the Peter Cooper Motor Group, my gosh, that's a mouthful, was delighted to hit the milestone. He said, "I can't thank everyone enough for turning up each year, playing and dipping into their pockets to raise a huge amount of money for Action Against Cancer. It's a charity very close to us, as my mum had been given very bad news when diagnosed with terminal cancer. Seeking a second opinion, we turned to Professor Justin Stebbing, having heard about his work at the Imperial Hospital in London. His treatment, supported by fundraising by Action Against Cancer, has reversed Mum's condition, and 7 years later, we are counting every new day as a blessing. Darren aims to raise £200,000 by 2022. And there's a picture of four golfers beaming away, very happy.
Here's another article about Licorisia, rather about fundraising for her statue. More than 100 people attended a talk on Licorisia, the medieval Jewish businesswoman and friend of kings who was murdered in 1277. The local Jewish community is launching a fundraising drive to pay for a statue to be erected outside Winchester Discovery Centre. The centre is on Jewry Street, close to where Licorisia lived and worked in the 13th century. She was a wealthy moneylender who helped to fund the building of Westminster Abbey. The talk on Saturday by Dr. Hannah Meyer was part of the Heritage Open Day weekend. A new charity, the Licorisia of Winchester Statue Appeal, is working to help raise £125,000 that will pay for both the statue and also educational work to promote tolerance. Dr. Mayer spoke of how Licorisia, a sharp businesswoman, made her fortune in the face of anti-Semitism that led to her death and that of her Christian maid, Alice. She told the gathering, "It is fitting that we commemorate Licorisia's life here today, and through the statue of Licorisia and her son, Asher, which will be erected outside the Discovery Centre, to recognise her achievements as Winchester's most influential medieval businesswoman, whose personal wealth and connections brought her royal favour and benefited her community, and to remember the importance of religious tolerance, as indicated by Winchester's Jewish past." She added, "Let's hope the statue does make people remember the great contribution that Licorisia made." And there is a picture of the model of the proposed statue, which is by Ian Ranks Broadley, FRBS. And I must say, it shows the mother holding the hand of her son. He's looking backwards, she's looking forwards. And it is an attractive statuette.
And another one. Sculpture unveiled to honour organ donors. A sculpture has been unveiled at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to remember and celebrate local organ donors. An hourglass of butterflies has been installed to recognise organ transplants made possible by patients at the end of their lives with the support of their families. This permanent reminder of organ and tissue donation serves as a place for families to remember and celebrate their loved ones. It was designed by Tony and Karen van der Bosport of the Hospital Art Studio and funded by the Hampshire Hospitals Charity. Tony and Karen had been working on the 6-foot sculpture for just over a year and worked closely with the Healthcare Trust. The event to unveil the artwork was attended by family members whose relatives became organ donors, as well as members of staff from the hospital who have supported families. John Emery was there with his daughter Alison to remember his wife Molly, who died at the age of 68 in November 2011. Molly had always been a vocal supporter of organ donation and had carried an organ donation card. John said, "Even though it was a really difficult time for us all, making the decision was really easy because we knew it was what she wanted. It makes me really proud of her to know that she's helped other people." In the last 4 years, 428 people across Hampshire have received a life-saving organ donation from deceased organ donors. Across the UK, there are around 6,500 people in need of an organ transplant, including around 150 children and teenagers. On average, 3 people die every day in need of an organ transplant because there just aren't enough organ donors. Laura English, a specialist nurse for organ donation at Hampshire Hospitals Healthcare, NHS Trust, said, "The decision to donate is life-changing for so many people who are awaiting transplants. Families can often feel comforted by this and are proud of the gift of life that their loved ones is giving the opportunity for another person, even a complete stranger, to have a second chance at life." And again, there's a photograph of this hourglass of butterflies. It's on a plinth with the hourglass and the butterflies rising up and sort of flying out of the top. And there are 2 sweet young nurses standing either side, beaming.
Henry Beaufort School hailed in parliamentary report. Henry Beaufort School has been included in the annual parliamentary review for secondary education. This edition of the review showcased the selected school's best practice as a learning tool for others. The key idea is to demonstrate how organisations have become leaders in their field. It will be sent out to thousands of leading policymakers, including MPs, peers at the House of Lords, head teachers, vice chancellors, government agencies, and the Department for Education. Head teacher Sue Hurls said, "This is a tremendous honour for the school and a very well-deserved accolade for the staff. I am delighted that we were invited to contribute to this prestigious publication based on our academic excellence." The article featuring Henry Beaufort in the review will concentrate on the school's approach to the development of independent learning skills for all of its students. The secondary school in Hairstock calls this habit building, which has resulted in consecutive annual improvements in GCSE results.
Inspiring talk at Chamber Celebration. Paralympian Aaron Phipps helped Hampshire Chamber of Commerce celebrate a half century of involvement in the Southampton Boat Show. The wheelchair rugby player, who competed at the London 2012 Paralympics, gave a motivating speech at the Chamber's annual boat show lunch. Addressing more than 100 business leaders, the 35-year-old from Totten explained how he had spent 2 weeks in a coma aged 15 when he contracted meningitis and had to have both his legs and most of his fingers amputated. "I got into sport doing the 26th Totten 10K race," he said. "I was the only person doing it in a wheelchair. They gave me a 5-minute start. And although I came in last, I enjoyed it so much that I decided to try other races. After competing in the 2006 London Marathon, he intensified his training, returned the next year, and brought his performance time down by half an hour to under 2 hours. Developing an interest in wheelchair rugby, he was headhunted by the Great Britain team for his speed and determination and went on to play at London 2012, narrowly missing out on a medal position. "I trained really hard," said Aaron. "I wanted a spot on that team so badly. I really had fire in the belly." Aaron has now come out of Paralympic retirement to prepare for a possible place in Team GB at the Tokyo 2020 Paralympics. The father of 2 joked that marriage, mortgage, elite athlete was probably the wrong order to take in life, but then wowed the audience further with an insight into his charity work for the Meningitis Research Foundation. This has led to him being the only disabled British person to have climbed Africa's highest mountain, Kilimanjaro, unassisted. Because of difficult terrain on the higher slopes, he was forced to leave his wheelchair, strap on knee pads, and crawl for 4 days to reach the summit. Aaron said, "We all have choices, no matter what we do." And there is a picture of Aaron with five of the other attendees at the chamber celebration. And I'm pleased to say they have dazzling smiles.
Horsebox overturns. An overturned horsebox caused delays for hours on a major Hampshire road yesterday. Police closed the A34 northbound near Three Maids Hill for several hours following the incident at around 11:15 a.m. Initially, delays were reported of around 20 minutes due to the blockage, but officers had to close the carriageway between the A272 and the A303 Bullington Cross to allow for the incident to be cleared. Repairs also had to be made to the central reservation barriers. During the closure, a diversion was put in place via the A272. The road was still closed as the Chronicle went to press, with police saying the horse had been safely removed. It was not clear whether the passenger or passengers of the vehicle were injured. And there is a photograph of this, which is quite extraordinary. It looks, the lorry is on its side, and the entire top half has completely come off. And what I would love to know is, how did they get the horse out? Why did it fall over? I feel that we haven't been told nearly enough about this incident.
Heritage Open Days Festival reaches new level of success. Thousands of visitors attended the Heritage Open Days Festival in Winchester over the weekend. The programme for the annual event was the biggest yet, with over 60 events taking place. Exhibitions were unveiled for both days of the weekend, and historic buildings, including the Hospital of St Cross, welcomed visitors for Open Days. Several new events were introduced, including an exhibition celebrating the extraordinary women of Hampshire. It took place at the Great Hall and highlighted the accomplishments of important women. Former MI5 agent and Winchester Care Home resident Susan Cook attended the event, where her story was shared. Various stage pieces were performed during the festival, including a set from the Wainfleet Singers and a play commemorating the life of Sir Walter Raleigh. Becky Brown, a volunteering leader of the Winchester Heritage Open Days, said, "We had a fabulous weekend with nearly 5,000 tickets booked and we think around 15,000 visits. We are, though, still counting the numbers, collating the feedback, drawing the prize draw and electoral services have yet to be counted, and extraordinary women of Hampshire ballot. It has been an incredible year and we are so grateful to our sponsors, especially Winchester College, for all their support. Community Project Hyde 900 were also involved and have reported that over 1,000 people visited their stand in the inner close. The stand drew attention from visitors who were interested in the story behind Hyde Abbey. Hyde 900 chairman Steve Marper said, "We've enjoyed unprecedented levels of interest in the Hyde Abbey story, and we're delighted that there continues to be an enormous enthusiasm among the public." And there are a number of pictures. The first one of knights in action at the near the West Gate, and there's a guy in a lovely blue surcoat with holding a sword, and he has a full visor helmet of armour, and his legs are encased in armour as well. The other chap who's fighting him is in jeans and trainers, which is, but he has got a helmet and he has got the gloves on, so perhaps they had to share the whole of the armour. There's a little girl voting, obviously about the women, and there's the Tudor music at the Great Hall. The Wainfleet Fleet Singers in the Great Hall, medieval tile making with Hyde 900, and the Mayor, Frank Pearson, discussing vintage MG cars.
The paper contains an obituary for J. Richard Plink. J. Richard Plink, a retired architect and award-winning artist, collapsed and died on Saturday, September the 8th, in the Minster Gallery, after battling with a heart condition for several years. Born in 1928 in Kent, Richard began painting and drawing early in his childhood. His love of art and creativity was influenced by his education at Stowe's School. He trained at the Architectural Association, London, and commenced practice in London initially, and after marrying in 1970, moved to the Bourne Valley. In 1972, together with two other partners, he established Plink, Lehman and Browning in the Square, Winchester, a highly successful architectural practice. Richard initially combined his love of experimental and abstract painting with his architectural career, gradually becoming an increasingly successful artist and relinquishing his architectural partnership in 1987. He was elected to the Royal Institute of British Watercolours in 1984 and exhibited in the Royal Academy Summer Exhibition several times. His award-winning work was exhibited both nationally and internationally. He tutored popular art courses for colleges and art societies. His work was printed in numerous art books and magazines, and he appeared on a BBC series about artists. Richard was a slightly eccentric, well-loved member of his local community, and his loss has been significantly felt by his local, artistic, and wider friends and family. He is survived by his widow, two children, and four grandchildren.
Speaking up for women. This one has a slightly different angle. BBC presenter Dame Jenny Murray had praise for the recognition given to women in business by the Test Valley Business Awards. Dame Jenny, presenter of Radio 4's Woman's Hour, was the guest of honour at the awards night held at Museum of Flying in Middle Wallop last Thursday. She said, "I'm delighted tonight that you are empathising, sorry, it was split, hard, rather hard to pronounce that, empathising the success of women in business for obvious reasons. Women have come a very long way in 100 years, since, frankly, a limited number of us managed to win the vote. Property owners over the age of 30 had the vote in 1918. It would take another 10 years for universal suffrage to happen, despite the incredible hard work of Emily Pankhurst and the suffragettes, Millicent Fawcett and the suffragists, and it should be acknowledged, a significant number of men. The first petition to Parliament was presented by John Stuart Mill, and there were numerous husbands who did childcare whilst their wives protested and chained themselves to railings, and a significant number of men actually joined in the breaking of windows and the burning of postboxes. They were imprisoned and force-fed just like the women were for their cause, and we really shouldn't underestimate the importance of men who have come along with us in the battle for equality." Dame Jenny said she had been speaking the day before with the mother of the House of Commons, Harriet Harman. She was talking about efforts in the House for the provision of baby care. "I'm sure you will remember how Jo Swinson was let down by Brandon Lewis when she was on maternity leave. And other women have been called lazy when they have not appeared in Parliament because they have taken off a short amount of time with small babies. Harriet told me she was very encouraged by the number of young men in Parliament who are supporting the idea of baby leave, not just for men or women, but for both. She said they are the men who have been brought up by feminist mothers, and they get it. It's very important that men come along with women in their fight for equality." And there's a photograph of Jenny Murray with the winners of the Test Valley Business Awards, all in various styles of clothes. And what's interesting, if you're interested in that sort of thing, is the footwear. We've got killer heels. We've got green satin, very nice stiletto-y shoes, some flat sandals, some black pumps and Jenny Murray wearing a very clunky pair of trainers.
Council names centre builders. Civic chiefs have confirmed the contractors who will build Winchester City Centre's 38 million leisure centre should the plans be approved. Wilmot Dixon has been selected to carry out the work following a bidding process. As previously reported, the multi-million pound scheme would include a flexible 50-metre swimming pool along with learner pool and a splash area, as well as, controversially, an 8-court sports hall. The site will also feature 8 treatment and therapy rooms, a gym with 200 stations, 2 large studios for exercise classes, a spin studio with around 60 bikes and a cafe. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for Health and Wellbeing and Leisure Centre Committee Chairman, said, "This is an exciting announcement showing real progress is being made to deliver the new sports and leisure centre. In practical terms, it means Wilmot Dixon and the architects can now shape the design and share their considerable experience of delivering these types of facilities. The council has selected this contractor to ensure that we can deliver the project on time and to budget when we have the planning green light. Wilmot Dixon's submission as part of the selection process included commitment to developing apprenticeships. Richard Pooter, Wilmot Dixon's managing director, said, "We are delighted to be Winchester City Council's contractor of choice for this fantastic project. This new facility will create an inspiring and inclusive physical environment. We are proud to be part of the team delivering more than just a sports and leisure facility, but instead a scheme that will have a long-standing and lasting legacy on those who use it and the environment it sits within. The scheme is yet to get planning consent. The proposal has been expected to go before today's planning committee, but now it is not clear when the decision will be made." Councillor Griffiths said, "The local planning authority, Winchester City Council, is currently considering the planning application, and when they have received all statutory consultee comments and given consideration, they will be progressing the application through a recommendation to the planning committee. This remains on target for autumn 2018. Work is due to begin in spring next year."
Religious teachings on Education Sunday. Pupils from local schools celebrated this year's Education Sunday at St Paul's Church. Canon Peter Seal and Bill Lucas, the Professor of Learning at Winchester University, delivered a sermon to children of various ages. Canon Peter admitted that he initially struggled with learning to read, until one teacher made it click. He later went on to take a theology degree at Exeter University. Now chaplain at Peter Simmons College, he said the connection between his experience and the great example of Jesus is that I think we learn best when our teachers meet us where we are. The event aimed to teach the students that knowledge is worth more than material things. Professor Lucas said, "The pattern of school, college or university, work and retirement is changing. Career breaks will become the norm. We are likely to switch between work that pays and work that is voluntary. We may well go to college age 60, 70 or older. A full life is a life that overflows with curiosity and kindness and uncertainty and openness to new experiences. I believe we need children and young people and young adults and 100-year-olds who are kind, generous, forgiving, morally brave, inquisitive, resilient, creative and collaborative. It is these kinds of attributes that will help us to live a life in all its fullness, and it is education and learning that are the means by which we can develop them. The children visiting later took part in art and craft activities, and there are pictures of the children doing exactly that, and they are enjoying themselves.
World War One Village Heroes Search. Villagers in Upham are seeking information on local men who served in the Great War. An exhibition is being organised to mark the centenary of the end of World War One. It will be in Upham Village Hall over the weekend of Saturday to Sunday, November the 10th and 11th. A barn dance is also planned for November the 10th in the Village Hall. The names of Upham heroes gathered so far are Bambury, H. Emmets, W. F. Flake, Holloway, W. G. Pierce, W. H. Pierce, Percy, Fields, Vi, and Wren. The roll of honour includes Harold J., William Gager, or Gager, Admiral Hood, F. Dyer, S. G. Scott. Research is being undertaken to find out more about each man. Anyone with further names, information, and artifacts can contact Janet Dunford on 01489 860 579. There's another number, but I think that would probably do.
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki.
Goodbye.
Norma.
Goodbye.
And David.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.